Hello and welcome to Rewatchable, episode 290. In this episode, we're going to be covering Sense8 208. All I want right now is one more bullet. If you want to get a hold of us, our email is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @re_watchable. And our Tumblr is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So you can get more familiar with our voices, we're going to give a little fun fact for each of us. I am your host and superfan, Mitch. We're going to start with our other superfan on this podcast episode, Mai. What's your fun fact for this week?
Of course, you pick me when I don't really have one.
It always happens.
I guess my fun fact could be that I'm getting back into genealogy, which is kind of fun. I'm trying to research my family history a little bit.
Are you going to do that 23andMe?
No, I am not doing that. I'm strictly going by like old church records and stuff like that.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool. Like old school records will get me pretty far too. I've done that sometimes just to see back in my family lines. It's kind of fun. It's almost addicting in a way.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, I super love doing that. And what a good fun fact for a show all about family and genes and everything of that sort. And Caitlin, you are our first newbie on this episode with us today. What is your fun fact?
My fun fact is that I have a new computer and I'm very excited about it.
Yay!
My last one decided one day that I didn't have a hard drive anymore. So...
Rude.
So I was using a work laptop that was running on Windows 7 for a good month, but I got a new one and it's very beautiful and it's pink and I'm very excited about it.
It's amazing.
I'm a dork. What brand is it?
It's an HP.
Yeah. It'll get you far. Good. That's awesome. Congratulations. It's like a new baby.
It is. I love it.
How exciting. I hope you're all set up on it and already to podcast on it for the first time.
Well, I got Zoom installed and you can hear me, so I'm gonna call that good.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you have a hard drive again. That's concerning. All right, and then Kristen, you are our second newbie on this episode. What is your fun fact today?
My fun fact is that despite my misgivings, and I was slightly unsure about it, Legacies on the CW is an absolute delight.
This is the Vampire Diaries spinoff, right?
In a private
school.
Yes. Honest to God, I mean, I loved the originals, and Vampire Diaries got a little old near the end. Like, it was, you know, it was still a decent show, but it's had its drawbacks. I am honestly in love with Legacies. It's really fresh. It's fun. These kids are, like, they're so much fun to watch, and, like, they've taken on this whole, like, magical creature monster thing at the moment. Like, they've started with more of a, it's almost like a Buffy-esque monster of the week kind of thing, where there's all these different creatures that are showing up in Mystic Falls, and they've never come across creatures before, so they're like, what the hell is all this? We thought this all was, like, a joke. Like, we thought this was all stories and whatever. And it's so much fun. So much fun. I'm pretty much in love.
It sounds like people at like Charmed or Teen Wolf would also like that show too.
Is it set in a school? Because it looks like it's set in a school.
Yeah, it's the whole premise of the show is that when the Vampire Diaries ended, the Salvatore boys donated the mansion that they lived in to Alaric and Caroline, who started a school for the supernatural. So that kids who were, you know, werewolves and vampires and witches had somewhere to go where they could learn how to harness their skills and just learn how to deal with being supernatural before they had to go out into the real world and learn how to deal with all the temptations of humanity.
So, well, I know Alaric is probably like more than a guest star, regular as the headmaster. Is Caroline there a lot too?
She hasn't been on yet. And as of now, has no plans to be on for the first season.
Well, that's troubling, seeing as the whole show is based around what she's doing.
They've got a really interesting way of kind of explaining away her absence at the moment, and I think we're only on episode 4. So they've got a 16 episode order for the first season. So we've still got a ways to go before we have to start worrying about why Carolyn's not there. But Julie Plec has already talked about how they kind of knew that Carolyn wasn't going to be in first season, but they still wanted her to be like a part of it because obviously these are her kids and, you know, this is her baby. This school is her baby too. And so they've got an episode coming up where the twins are like kind of over not having their mom around. And like, we haven't seen this episode yet, but Julie Plec's been talking about it for weeks now. About how they're just finally going to have it out with their dad and they're going to start hearing about why their mom's not there. And like, there's a whole bunch of stuff coming up that I'm really excited about. It hasn't really been strange not to have Caroline there yet, but I know coming down the pike, it's going to be like, okay, are they going to be able to get Candace to do the show or not? I know after the originals ended, Candace was really interested in just like taking time off because she had just gotten done with Vampire Diaries and then they dragged her in to do originals and she was like, I want some time with my kids and I want some time with my husband and leave me alone. But I have a feeling that they'll be able to kind of pull her in for maybe even just guest spots here and there eventually. It's just immediately I think she's taking time off. But yeah, it's a great show. So if you're not watching, you really don't have to know anything about the world that it exists in. Right. I mean, they'll give you what you need to know, but you really don't have to have watched the other shows to make sense of it. So it's good fun.
Yeah, I know we have a lot of crossover with our Buffy and Angel listeners into that other vampire universe, not Twilight. So yeah, I'm sure a lot of other people may have just been convinced to check out the show. I know I am now going to see it because of your recommendations. So thanks for that, Kristen.
Yeah, I have a feeling that you are going to love Lizzie Saltzman. And when you do, just make sure to let me know because, oh my God, she's fantastic.
100% will. Okay, my fun fact for this week is that I had two video games to review in a row. So it was a fun and a very exhausting experience. I'm kind of still in the middle of it. The first was Spyro the Dragon. This one is Pokemon Let's Go. And both are like remakes or remasters. So I'm kind of familiar with what's going on, which helps a lot. Because if I didn't, I would be so stuck in so many places. But yeah, it's been like a rush because I never really have had two games in 1 week. It's quite the turnover, but I don't know. It's kind of like, I thought of what Lito was saying, it's my dream and now it's over. This is my dream. This is really cool. So I'm super excited to be in a position in life where I'm so lucky so as to be reviewing games for Hypeable. I think it's super fun. So yeah, if you wanted to check out any of my reviews or any of my work, as of late, you'll know why I'm going so crazy. Just click on my byline and you'll be like, whoa, there's a lot going on. Because that's just the world, no matter what you're doing.
I played a hell of a lot of Spyro.
Oh, yeah?
Back in the day. So I was really excited to see that Spyro hasn't, like, just descended into nothing. Like, I'm glad they brought it back and that it's got a new game. I'm sure that was fun.
It was, and it was beautiful. They made it in a really great engine, and it feels authentic to the original, which is clunky, but also amazing.
Right? Yeah, it is. It was clunky, but really, really good fun. So that's awesome.
Yeah, clunky in all the right ways, I would put it. All right, so hey, we're going to jump into now our recap of Sense8 208. All I want right now is one more bullet. I wrote the doc this week, and our show synopsis is, in this episode, leave me the fuck alone, echoing, echoing, echoing. Wolfgang has an epic shootout with Lila and wants no more of her fuckery. Cophius gains a superpowered ally. Lito eats ice cream and Riley calls Interpol. And going into our first point of discussion this week, we had a bit of a cliffhanger with Jonas. He wasn't dead all of a sudden. Pretty sure we saw that Bonesaw like really getting into his head there, but whatever, I'll let that go for now. And we have the reveal that he took a deal with the devil for this swanky apartment he's now in and some safety. He's working with BPO because he doesn't have a choice. They're either going to keep him non-zombified and working with him, or zombified and forcibly working with him. So he really didn't have a choice. It's not like the Sensates seem to like they really blame him. They're just as confused as we are, though, because there are so many twists in this man's story. It's so hard to keep track of what's going on with him. But apparently, and this part I kind of get lost on, his life is controlled by whether Whispers lives or dies, in a way. They're tied together. Because the chairman doesn't trust Whispers, but he needs them to track down Sense8s. The chairman, we are just now hearing of, if not for the first time recently, so that's kind of a new element to throw in here. And yeah, it's a big, once again, as the show often does, usually in the end of the episode, info dump. But this felt like the end of the last episode. It felt like you could have just put this all on the last one. But they wanted to get you to keep watching, so that's why they stuck this scene in 208. Yeah, Kirsten, did you follow the twists here? And are you kind of confused, like the Sense8s, or do you have a more concrete feel on, like, can we trust him or not, Jonas?
I mean, when it comes to Jonas, you would be an idiot to completely trust him, because he keeps so much close to the vest that it's impossible to 100% believe he's on your side, especially now that his life is tied to Whispers in some way, shape, or form, because now he has an invested interest in keeping Whispers alive. Like, mm-hmm. You can't fully trust him, because he's never going to want Whispers killed, because then he dies, and that's not great. So, yeah. I followed most of it, but there's always, especially in the show, it's just hard to follow everything. So I'm sure there's some aspect of this that I missed, but for the most part, I think I followed.
Yeah, no, I think we're supposed to be confused. We'll get into this in the feedback, actually. A listener does write in about the way we're presented the story and how the Sensates feel mimics how we should feel, that we're not missing anything, really. But the show just has a lot to do, so it moves on. And exactly. Thus it does. They go right into the mansion, and they are going in to take these papers from Whispers' safe, assumedly, because Wolfgang's able to remember via Will how to open up that safe. He remembers those numbers. The only thing here is that I got a bit confused in the action, because they don't show Riley for a good amount of time. She's not doing the action as someone else. They just start showing them do it. And I guess that must be really hard to block all of this with these eight characters now all running around doing the same thing, because they're all talking about, we can't just all stand here. It felt like, especially Will, was back in Chicago all of a sudden, and it kind of threw me for a loop. I was like, did I miss another really quick plane ride? What's going on with him? But no, it was just all Riley. Did you find yourself confused in this scene, like, blocking-wise, Caitlin?
I'm more confused by your explanation of what you were thinking than what happened.
Me too.
I have no idea what you're talking about, honestly.
Because he was actually at Whisper's house, which was in England.
That's where I got lost. I thought we were in Chicago as Riley. Now I get it.
I'm pretty sure that the house is in Lancaster.
It is.
Yeah.
Which is where Will actually was, and Wolfgang cracked the safe because that's what he does. I don't think they knew the combo. Wolfgang's just that good with safes that he was able to do it really easy.
Because we did see the safe being opened in one of Will's, like, Whispers invasions.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Because the reason Will is so impressed by it is because I don't think he gave him the combo. I think Wolfgang was just like, oh, here you go.
Well, I mean, when we first meet Wolfgang, when he's, like, breaking into an unbreakable safe, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and he says, I like safes.
Yes, he does. I'm with the action now. I got confused because I watched the last two episodes together, and it transitions very quickly from Riley getting the address written on her arm to Will, and I forgot that he wasn't in Chicago, because, like, we've had so much association with Whispers in Chicago as well. So I hope I wasn't the only listener out there that got a little bit flustered and confused with all this action going on, but that's where we have co-hosts to catch up with us. Thanks.
It's all good.
It's not the first time, no. Right, this show is very hard to host because there are so many things going on all at once.
Yep, it won't be the last either.
Oh, no, it won't, for sure. And then we go into Coffee's storyline from there. He's getting his popularity in the polls against his somewhat slimy opponent, it seems. And that slimy opponent is slandering Kafius via some political ads that are saying Van Damme punched a man through the head, drove on the sidewalk, makes you pay for protection, things that aren't true. And people are believing it, and that's not going to help Kafius' reputation. Or maybe it will. We don't know. But he has added security now, is the point of that, is that he's gaining attention, and much like Kala, he needs to be protected all the time now. Apparently they didn't work later on, but Mai, as you're watching this again, did you find yourself seeing anything similar to like the Hope campaign of Obama in this change, or was it change, I think, or courage? Courage was Kafius' line here.
Oh, I am not the right person to ask about that.
I mean, yeah, it's a very American thing, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess.
Yeah, and it was also interesting, too, to see how then the superpower comes in, holds him at gunpoint, I guess, to show his power over Kavius, and then takes him out in his boxers in the street, and then it was like, it's almost to the point of the enemy of my enemy is my friend, or however which way that works. Regardless, they're both against the other man running for office. They want to have an uprising from their town. So the superpower comes back, and we didn't really see his conclusion before. He was chased around. He was on a motorcycle, and Kafius was in the Van Damme. This is after everybody's arms were chopped off and whatnot by Sun. And now he's back all of a sudden. So that's that. He's kind of going against his boss and his gang leader, and superpower is back here to be on Kafius' side. Caitlin, were you surprised to see superpower come back?
I mean, I forgot who he was, so surprised, not really. It was more like, who is this guy again? I honestly didn't remember who he was.
I remember him from that iconic line, the "I take the fuck I want" line on the bus. Remember when he's taking the ring from the old woman?
No. I don't.
It was something I used to quote with my friends. We thought it was such a funny line. We'd say it whenever we're like stealing food from each other. I take the fuck I want.
I mean, I remembered him later, but in the moment I was like, who is this? Like, it didn't have a lot of effect on me in the moment because I didn't remember who he was. There are so many people coming in and out that I'm starting to lose track of a lot of them.
Yeah, and I'm already losing track of locations. Are we in England? Are we in Chicago? I just don't know sometimes. I feel you that on that. And then, Kristen, too. Did you think that the assailant was going to harm Kafius before we had the reveal that it was superpower?
I mean, dude had a gun. He was being real lackadaisical with it before he actually woke him up. So I didn't know what to expect. You know, when a character is held at gunpoint, it's hard to think that everything's going to be fine. But ultimately, I didn't necessarily think he was going to hurt Kafius. I just thought he was trying to make sure he got taken seriously in this moment. I don't know. I didn't think anything was going to happen to Kafius. I just wasn't sure who this Joker was. I was with Caitlin. I did not remember him at all. And then it kind of all, you know, came back at once. It was like, oh, okay. But yeah, it took me a while.
Yeah, it takes a second because there are a lot of characters in Kafius' world, as there are in others. So it's tough to keep that kind of encyclopedic knowledge of every minor character in the eight characters' lives, plus all of the flashbacks. So it's a lot to take on the show. It's a lot like researching or doing homework sometimes, because you feel like you can never turn off your brain. You have to be actively thinking, how do I know this person? What scene have I seen them in before? What significance do they have to what's going on in the current action? But yeah, that's the superpower. In case everybody forgot, he attacked Van Damme's bus, and or Kavius's bus, and Kafius ended up like killing his whole entire gang via Sun. So that was that. He's back. And Leto is in this episode doing a pretty funny thing. It's sad, but he's just sitting there and eating his brownie fudge ice cream, and he's so sad, and it's so cute. He's in his like giant like onesie pajamas. Oh my God. He's such a sad sore for it's, your eyes. He's,
it's chocolate fudge brownie and it's Ben and Jerry's and it is my flavor. So knowing that Lido's chosen flavor is my flavor makes me very happy.
I know, right? And it's so funny when they're like, Lido, no, that's 20 minutes on the treadmill every bite you take. And he just takes a bite like defiantly in their face.
Because it's so good.
It's fantastic. And he is so cute in this episode. Like, oh, I know he's depressed. I know he's heartbroken and that he feels like everything is just falling apart around him. But he's so precious. I just can't help but want to just hug him. Just come here.
You want to take care of him.
Right?
Yeah.
Him in his little onesie, he looks like a child. Like, he's kind of acting like a child because he's sad, and you revert to that a little bit when you're sad. But in his little pajamas, like, wandering around, and, like, when he's with Sun with the stuffed animals and the popcorn, and, like, he's so adorable in this episode.
Yeah, and Sun does take care of him for a bit, too, in her own way. She, we'll get to her plot later, is in that motel, and he's just looking sad at her. He's laying on the ground and in the street and, like, in everything, and she keeps rolling her eyes at him, and then she cuts him down, and she's like, I have every reason to be laying down in the bed crying right now. Two lost parents and a brother that I have to kill before he kills me. But Lido's like, yeah, but we both need to cry and cuddle, so come right here. She lays his head on his thigh. And then she's alone, because apparently Lido is just that selfish. I don't know. Maybe it's something else going on, but he couldn't really give her all the attention she needed at the time, because she finally seemed like she opened up in just a little bit, and all of a sudden he was gone. I found that to be just a little bit sad, but I really liked those pillows they were holding. They were cute.
I think as much as Sun is kind of her own entity, like, she's a part of the group, and she helps and whatever, but she's very... very solid by herself. So for Lido to kind of be like, come here, you know, maybe I'm here to remind you that sometimes you just need to lie down and have a good cry. Yeah. Like, I think it is him taking care of her. Like, he may not be there for every second of every day, but him reminding her that it's okay to cry about your, you know, crap situation and everything that you've had to deal with. Like, it's really sweet.
And she's there to remind him that he needs some perspective in his life.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, with your mother accepts you, you have a man that loves you unconditionally, and you have a friend that was willing to give her entire life for you, give over her trust fund, I guess, and her social circle. That's a pretty big deal that happened last week. So she's right. He's not really counting his blessings here in the ways that he should be. Once again, I talked about, yeah, it's his dream to be in this, like, straight action role. He needs to realign his dream. That's what Hernando and Danny are trying to get him at during this sad movie watching scene. I liked how we kept going back and seeing Lito's mom and all of their relatives and friends watching the movie. And Lido would always try and distract them, throwing popcorn into his mouth, because he's always trying to be the center of attention in any group. But they're like, come on, move. And then he was like, why are they so invested in this movie? And he wants that kind of power, it seems. And he wants to live that lie. He loves that lie. He's lived off of being in the closet, and he's loved being an actor in terms of those both being quote-unquote lies for quite a long time. So that I found to be pretty important for his character. And then I want to pose this to you, Caitlin. Hernando and Danny say he should have a great career up and coming because he's, you know, getting popularity from the gay pride parade. Lito's convinced that it's over, at least his old version. Now, do you see, like, a mix of those two ideas happening, or do you see, like, either one taking over?
I mean, I think he's going to have to forge a new path, but one that, like, is pretty well being laid out in front of him. Like, a lot of people are telling him how much what he's doing, like, matters to them. But I think we should give him room to, you know, grieve the loss of something that was very important to him. But that doesn't mean his world is over. I think he's just going through a period of grief at the moment, but he has a future in that he can go with. He needs to grieve first.
Yeah, it's a big part of his life that's over.
Exactly, yeah. But that doesn't mean he has no future.
Yeah, but, you know, change is hard.
Exactly.
Right, like the man that hugged him in the elevator, I found to be pretty inspiring because Leto needed that. He like openly sobbed into a stranger's arms right then and there. I think it was a mix of someone consoling him, and also I really have inspired other people. So even in that dark moment, Leto could feel that little glimmer of hope for his life, not even just his career, but for the change he can make in his world to make it so that people can be more comfortable with being openly gay. I think that this is all important stuff for a character that tends to be very overdramatic. We have a lot of very moving stuff for him going on too.
I think with Leto, what's going to be really powerful is that he's going to move from a career that he has constantly described as being one of lies to like his genuine truth, like being his path forward.
Right. Well, no comment, but I like your comments. All right. And then Sun too, she's going to a love motel because she knows that they'll have extra privacy there and she can hide from the police pretty effectively. Moon is on her side, but he does have some sort of legal obligation to at least get her in the station, tell her story. It's funny because her brother is defined as being a murderer. She's not doing it in cold blood. He is, but I guess by that definition, she's still a murderer. So you'd think that they would have, at least Moon would have a little bit more objection to her just going free. Don't think he was given too much of a choice. But I don't know. Guns exist for a reason. He tried to shoot her the first time. He has a certain kind of affection for her that's preventing this from going on. So she's kind of able to get away here and just be in a love motel. If he really cared, do you feel like he could have put it out like an all points bulletin on her even more so than there was already? But maybe she's just good at hiding. I don't know. I just accepted it for what it was, that she's at a love motel and that she's all cool with it. But when she's there, she is hearing
When did he try to shoot her?
When they were on top of Mrs. Cho's apartment during that whole chase scene, he was shooting at her.
That didn't happen.
He had a gun.
He had a gun that he put away.
He put away during their fight, but like was while he was chasing her, he definitely shot and she put her hands up.
Pretty sure he shot into the sky.
Oh, okay. So he didn't, like, aim at her.
It was like a warning shot.
Right.
Yeah, that's how he knew he was not the worst.
Right, right.
And I think, like, the whole hotel thing is literally, like, there's nobody there to take reservations or whatever. That's why it's so private. Like, It's cash only. There's no paper trail. Every other hotel in the world, you know, you'd have to check in with a credit card and your name would be attached to everything. These love motels are there for a reason, and so that's why she's utilizing the way she is.
You know, like it's funny too, because the last episode of Sense8, I was just thinking that I could do with seeing more of Sun's culture, like out in the city of Seoul, seeing what she's doing out there. And I kind of got it here by seeing like a seedy, very strange and dark thing, because immediately my mind went to, oh yeah, people go here to do a lot of illegal shit. And that's not something I've seen in my lifetime. I don't know how common it is in Seoul if she just happens to know of a good place to find such a thing in such a neighborhood, you know. But I found that to be like culturally shocking for me that this thing even kind of existed in the first place. It seemed very like high tech, kind of like Cloud Atlas seems. I hadn't watched it yet, but when she was in that movie, it seems like that's something else she would have done in that too. Very robot driven. So Nomi does fill Sun in here by saying that her brother is going to throw the gala. He was going to cancel it, but then he last minute said, yeah, it's still happening. So this is going to be Sun's in, she thinks. She says that she's going to go in as staff because, as Neats notes, just like the TSA, they don't really check staff. So there's sometimes some like political things shoved in about, like, I don't know, American tendencies to let certain things fly under the radar. That's something that's pretty common in Sensei, and I liked this one because it's very eye-opening. If you think about it, the TSA can just do whatever they need to because they're just assumed as being trustworthy. I don't know. I wouldn't really know the inside of TSA and airports, but as it is, she's planning on going in as staff. She doesn't know how to bartend, but Leto does. He's so cute, flipping around his tumbler. I don't go to bars enough to know the difference, but he was precious. He learned it from a movie.
That was a cocktail shaker.
There we go. See? You learn something new every day. Whenever that scene happens, I always think, like, it's weird that he's shaking it in Nomi's kitchen, assumingly. Or no, I think he might have had that conveniently going on already in his house, and then he just showed up holding it.
Oh, no. He was just showing off. Yeah. He picked it up off the counter and just started messing with it to show that he could be helpful. I think they've physically manipulated stuff, like Kala grabbing the box to help Will, and they showed that, like, Will was the one grabbing the box, but he was sitting there the whole time.
So that must have been Nomi going up there and doing, like, all that. I don't know.
We may not know exactly how it played out in the scene, but he was just messing around with it. It was her cocktail shaker, but he just started showing off to be like, well, maybe I can help you.
Yeah, and it could have been just like an imagined cocktail shaker. It doesn't even have to be, like, you could look at it and then start playing with it in your head. And that's just all in the psyllium, not really going on in the real world. It's getting very Matrix-y. God, the show really does come from its sister series. Holy shit. So I know that's one of our favorite scenes. We'll talk about it a little bit more there with Leto. We'll go into now with Kala. And according to Will, she wants to confess all of this sensate psyllium science. Say that 5 times fast. To Rajan, because she's in love with Wolfgang. Perhaps Rajan at the same time, but... Will just says with another man. And the reason this is happening is because she is trying to make sure he's okay during what is assumed his withdrawal. I did bring that up before, that we didn't really see his withdrawal when he was kind of just like walking around all of a sudden. He was cool all of a sudden. It was very weird to me, but I think we're finally seeing it here. But Kala seems to know of a way too to get around that. So pretty convenient to have a chemist in your group, I should say. Not much more to say other than, yeah, Caitlin, do you think she's going to reveal all to Rajan, or how is this going to end?
I would just like to say I'm very mad at this story. Like, I've been unhappy with it, and I'm just getting more and more mad at this story. Like, they're very clearly making Rajan an asshole, like, just as Kala decides she's going to have an affair, yeah. Like, which is what I was worried they were going to do. Now they're doing it, and I'm just even angrier about it. And clearly they're making him really awful so that if she does tell him, he's just going to become even more of a complication, even though he was, like, really wonderful when we first met him. And I'm really annoyed with how they're working to justify her bad choices and bad behavior. And I hate this story.
You're not alone. I can give you that much. Mai, do you feel similarly to the two of us?
No comment.
Fair enough. I like that. Kristen?
I don't have strong feelings about Kala and her storyline. I like how she interacts with everyone else. But when it comes to Rajan, like, okay, he starts out seeming like this great, perfect guy, but we've seen what his father's been up to, and I've always kind of wondered whether he wasn't as great as he appeared to be. So when the show starts showing, like, his true, you know, true colors kind of shining through, it doesn't come as a complete shock to me. I totally understand where Caitlin is upset and pissed about this, because I kind of agree. Like, I don't like that we're finally seeing his true colors now that Kala is off doing things she shouldn't be, and, you know, it that I don't like the timing of it. But I've always kind of wondered whether Rajan was really this, you know, lovely guy who always has the right answers and, you know, is always telling Kala exactly what she wants to hear. I've never 100% believed he was that guy. So it's a little, for me, it's yes, it's convenient that, oh, now he's this terrible guy, but I've kind of never bought into the he's the perfect husband guy either.
Yeah, and we do see a little bit more of how Rajan treats Kala's opinion. He reveres her, and he really does listen when she has something to say. I've always appreciated that about him. And whether or not he may end up slimy or horrible and the worst person in the world, or what his true actions are, to her face, he said, you're right, here are my flowers. I can't run the company like this. I've done this since I was a child this way, but she's seeming like she wants to or is able to have a good influence on this business, on Rajan as a character. It reminds me of also the way that Kafius's mother says that she's really nervous about him running for political office. And he respects her opinion very quickly. He's like, yeah, I'm not going to do it because I know it's important to you. So I like that level of respect we're seeing here. But I also don't like the seedy stuff that's going on in the background, where Rajan is just seemingly punched in the face, and then he's yelling on the phone with an American client. It seems like if he is making these changes that he says he is, he's pissing a lot of people off. They want their money for their expired drugs. It's tough to say more as a super fan, so I'll go to newbies again. Kristen, then, with Rajan getting punched and then him yelling on the phone, do you see this as coming to a head in, like, the next episode, or do you think they'll wait till the season 2 finale?
I don't know. I mean, this, while it's important to Kala and Rajan, as far as the rest of the show is concerned, it's rather minor. I could see it being tied into maybe some of Kafius's stuff, and that, like, bringing about a conclusion for them, but honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if it gets pushed off a couple of episodes with everything else that's going on. Especially since we got the build-up to Sun going to the gala, and we haven't yet seen her at the gala. So, like, that's obviously going to take a big part of the next episode, as she's probably going to be confronting her brother. But, yeah, so I don't know how much room they're going to have to tell the rest of this story.
Right. And I know, Caitlin, too, you were saying then that they're making Rajan an asshole so that Kala can have more freedom to be like, and I'm going to be with Wolfgang now without repercussion. Do you think then that Rajan is going to continue down a dark path or have more dark reveals?
Oh, I think they're going to continue making him sketchy and then maybe make him slightly less sketchy and then prove he's being sketchy all along. I am so bitter about this story. I have the worst, like, I'm just expecting the worst because everything I was worried about has happened so far. So I'm just expecting it to be about as awful as possible.
Yeah. As far as it runs, I like Kala. I get her flaws. They make sense to me because it's all a mind fuck. In any given way, I keep saying that, but it is. How do you really handle an affair that's strictly in your head? I don't know. Mai, what were you going to say?
I just wish that the show was a little bit clearer on Kala's feelings for Rajan. Like, clearly she cares for him, but has it developed at all? Or is she still, like, yeah, he's a nice guy. He's fine.
It seems like she definitely appreciates, and I would too, the privilege of being in the company of such a rich person because she likes going shopping, it seems.
Yeah, having a sugar daddy. Like, that's, right. That's not exactly what I want. Like, have some emotions about the dude, maybe.
I mean, it seemed like they had a somewhat healthy marriage going on there just
sometimes it seems
right, yeah, like just it. After the honeymoon, like after they kind of got back, it seemed like they had settled into being married and that things were good. I mean, as much as we saw of it, so I don't know for sure how bonded they are, but it seemed like it.
Well, it's an attractive marriage from, not even coming from an emotional standpoint, from like a power standpoint, if she was to ever feel that way, which I don't know, because he's a leader or high a position in a large pharmaceutical company, and it's almost starting to feel like royalty in the way that they're being treated politically here.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but we've heard Rajan say that he loves Kala, right? But I don't think we've heard it the other way around.
No. Yeah, I can't think of any time that she said it.
Which would be fine if Rajan knew that and was fine with it.
Right.
Relationships do exist.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, be explicit. Like, tell me what it is.
But she's just using her unhappiness in the situation as an excuse. But then she has had every opportunity to get out of it. Like, he even gave her the chance to walk away from their marriage, and she refused. That's what I find so frustrating about her.
Like, you know, actually,
she never, like, the fact that he literally gave her the out, like, she wouldn't have even had to have started a confrontation, which is what she's very clearly afraid of. Like, it just, and her family is like, just do what makes you happy. We don't care. If you don't love him, don't marry him. It's just, she's making bad choices based on feelings that the show and the narrative has given her every way possible out of, and now she's continuing to behave badly out of emotion. Like, she's made herself uncomfortable, and now she's doing bad things out of feeling uncomfortable that she never needed to do in the first place.
Yeah, she's feeling a certain obligation in places where, you know, we're all saying, like, you don't need to, like, you had your out, it was easy. And we'll have a perfect follow-up to this in our feedback, because we did have someone write in with a really interesting perspective on Indian culture and what Kala feels like she needs to do here and what she's not doing. So I'll save that as a teaser for just in a little bit when we get more of Kala discussion here. But now we're going to move on to Will. Will takes, for the first time in quite a while, a little bit of a backseat here. And he wants heroin, as we saw with Kala, but he gets his iron shot, so he should be all fine. He's worrying a lot for Riley. He's kind of always jumping into other sensates and trying to check in with her and wasn't letting her sleep on the airplane to Chicago and everything, but he isn't really able to take any action after he had that invasion of the mansion. He's going stir crazy, and he gets a very fuzzy glimpse into Whispers' life. They seem like they're in probably some kind of nice house, maybe a very nice hotel. And Whispers, his wife, and his child are all having this confrontation, this argument about the fact that they're still hiding. And it opens up Whispers' eyes, or Will's eyes towards Whispers' struggle. He says, "You're just like the rest of us." And it's, to me, I think, a way of Will thinking he could potentially end up like Whispers if he let himself go, if he lost his moral compass in life, perhaps as Riley or his other sensates, because he very plainly relates to him. He's like, "You're one of us." Kristen, did you find that to be an interesting perspective to take here?
I don't know. I guess I don't know what you mean.
So Will relates here. He says, "You're just like us," because Whispers is in hiding. Did you find that interesting?
I mean, it's interesting. It's never not interesting to watch the hunter become the hunted. And at this point, that's basically what's happened. You know, the sensates were running and running and running and running before, trying to stay ahead of him and keeping Nomi out of sight. And Will, you know, diving into the heroin full throttle to avoid, you know, Whispers getting a bead on any of them. But now they've got the upper hand because Whispers doesn't have this giant power structure at his back and everybody, you know, looking out for him and helping him out. So yes, it's interesting to watch Whispers kind of get the script flipped on him. But at this point, like, there's so much there's so much going on with both sides of this that it's hard to know exactly how this is going to shake out. Like, with Jonas attached to Whispers, and they're all, you know, friendly with Jonas, but then you've got all of them, you know, Whispers is still a threat to them and still has attachments to the BPO and still has people who work, you know, who are loyal to him, aka a helicopter showing up to save him. You know, there's still a lot going on, so it's hard to know how or what comes next for them, but it's not bad to see Whispers get nervous.
That's for sure. Yeah, he's a pretty clear antagonist for us. Even if you can relate to them in the slightest, it doesn't make them any less evil. Mai, did you find that his interaction with his wife and daughter was shocking? Like, do you feel the same way I have so far, that he's had it very put together for them and now he's starting to unravel?
Whispers, that is?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. He is, he's losing his shit, I believe the phrase is.
Yeah, he is.
Or it feels like it, but the most unsettling thing about that scene is seeing Riley interposed over his wife, like, shifting in and out.
Yeah, as Will puts himself in Whispers' shoes, he often then places Riley creepy as the wife. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when he yells that thing, not only did it just sound like almost alien, it was, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a good scene. Not a nice one, but a good one.
Facts. Yes, it is. It's very moving to me because I liked getting that look into Whispers' head. I found it to be pretty rare.
Yeah.
I think most shows try and take a practice at that. Vampire Diaries is on my mind, of course. They often tend to do that. But it felt very good for moving our story in a way that makes sense now, because I think we're going to see a bit of a conflict in, do we murder Whispers? Do we catch him? Do we let him go? How do we end this all just peacefully? Or do we just end this violently like we've been planning? I think there's a bit of a conflict building here that Will is gaining that moral compass. He, as Jonas said, does not or does want to kill a man in cold blood. He has to figure that part out. Whether or not it's cold blood is arguable because the man is consistently threatening to end their lives. So take
there
it or
also
leave
it. Seems to be a conflict brewing in his support system at home. So.
Yeah.
Could be an opportunity to strike there, maybe.
Yeah, to get into his head a little bit and being like, well, your wife and daughter don't really like you now, do they, Milt? In the way that Will does. He does it better than me.
Milt?
Yeah. The Milt of it all.
Well, I just don't think that a man who, like, kidnaps and lobotomizes people and then uses them as tools for mass shootings deserves an ounce of sympathy.
Yeah. That was so rough last week.
Yeah.
And that has to remain on the forefront of our minds. It's almost like Will forgets that or isn't thinking of it anymore because he's so lost in getting in the head, the literal shoes of his enemy. It was such a violent and like thoughtless act. So to give us this opportunity to feel like Will is here, it's rough. It's all very like raw. I personally have always been against Whispers. I don't really feel any sympathy toward him.
No,
I don't think I would be able to.
Minus.
Yeah, I'd be pretty blind to his heinous crimes.
But like,
I'm not going to give the Grindelwald reference that everybody wants me to.
I wouldn't get it.
The title of the movie.
But newbies, what do you think his wife knows, if anything?
I think she knows he's doing sketchy things and making them a lot of money, and she's okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be strange to think she doesn't know something, but I would imagine she has no idea his actual, like, what his actual work is. But she knows that the money's coming in and it's good, and, you know, he's a little fraught. Nobody would be like, Whispers is he's really strange. So I'm sure, you know, him just being the way he is, she's probably aware that what he's doing is twisted and weird. She just doesn't know what it is.
It reminds me of the show Daredevil, where they have Kingpin and Vanessa, and she seems very complacent and sometimes active in his evil doings, but it's always coming out of a place of love. Now, we haven't really gotten that far of a glimpse into their relationship, but as far as this scene gives me, it's like, I had such a nice life before you ruined it by being bad, even though you were being bad this whole time. Go back to letting us go home. This isn't fair.
I wouldn't compare Whispers to Fisk. Like, Fisk is more of a lawful evil.
Yeah. How do you mean lawful evil there?
Like, he has a code and he sticks to it. He thinks he's making the city better by what he's doing, and Whispers is more chaotic evil, I think.
It's hard to follow his stream of thought, even though we're literally seeing into his mind.
Or maybe more neutral evil, which is the only way I can explain without spoiling anything.
Well, yeah, and the neutral evil sometimes to me feels more dangerous than chaotic evil, because neutral evil can be swayed. Chaotic is unpredictable.
Yeah, chaotic is more like the Joker.
Yeah, but it feels not as dangerous for some reason. I don't know. It feels like those that can be swayed are more dangerous than those that are random.
Yeah.
They're very close, though. Those both kinds of evil. Of course, I'm thinking politically as soon as I bring this up, but I'm going to not derail that conversation into that genre. I'm sure everybody feels or understands my conversation point there. So yeah, that's Whispers and all that he's getting into here. We go into Riley a little bit. She's in Chicago still. She's with Diego, and they're looking on this giant police computer that we've seen a couple of times, looking for a missing persons report on the academic. We don't know her name, but we know she was involved with Ruth Sadawi, and she was the one that gave us that address last week. It's very funny how they're just like, oh, okay, using the giant police computer in my day off, go right ahead. And no one really bats an eyelash at it. And they're like, yeah, just bring her back to this really important computer. She's your friend looking for a missing person. Cool. That didn't feel like something that would happen in like the real world. Did this feel far-fetched to you, Caitlin?
We're watching a show literally about another species of human. I'm not going to be real concerned about it.
True.
I mean, Diego's not a beat cop. He's a detective, right? Like, him and Will have cases. It's not like they're just constantly responding. I don't know. Honestly, I don't remember. I would imagine him coming in on his day off to work on a case or something wouldn't be completely out of line, especially if it's something that's ongoing. If he just can't get it out of his head. Bringing a friend along is probably a little bit concerning for them. But, you know, if she can be helpful, maybe they think she's a witness or something.
But it also seemed like the only other person there was, like, someone new. So
yeah,
probably wasn't going to be like, hey, guy who's been here a lot longer than me and is higher in rank than me, you probably shouldn't be bringing your friend back there.
Yeah,
that's a good point. The lady he took over for Will's desk. Well, yeah, so we're back here at the computer, and it's really convenient that we're doing this right now, because conveniently Nomi bumps her head when we need her the most. So Riley ends up FaceTiming with Neitz to include her in the drama, the action, in trying to make sure that they're all in on Wolfgang's meeting with Lila. They're getting all of the information online that they can. So that's pretty cool that they can find a way into it. I guess the show probably got tired of always presenting Nomi as the ultimate computer solution, because it's like, oh, she'll just drop everything and do it. This time she dropped. She hit her head because she like broke a heel and was out. So they had to get a little bit creative here and trying to right around what has become a little bit of a formulaic answer to everything. I appreciated it. I thought it was creative enough writing, and I liked how it tied in with the academic from last week. They're, you know, getting Riley where she needs to be to set this up, but in a somewhat organic way. We don't really find out anything about that academic. They kind of dropped that real quick because of the meeting we'll get to with Lila in just a bit. But I thought it was cute. I liked when Amanita had that reaction to seeing Riley, and Riley gives her just that little smile of recognition. Like, she knows how important she is to Nomi because, you know, she's been in Nomi's head. They banged, all of them. so that was, it was kind of sweet to be like, oh, you're that person who's been a stand-in for my girlfriend in bed. Hi. it's always going to be strange to me that there are other people involved in those giant orgy scenes that are not part of the Sense 8 group. And everybody just seems very complacent when they're involved in this, if they know. Well, at least Amanita. So take it or leave it. They're just, Amanita is just so open-minded that she'll be happy with this. And she's very cool with every Sense 8 she meets. Like, even seeing you know, Lido on screen, she was like, is that Lido? Like, it's cute. It's fun. And yeah, Kristen, what'd you think of the first time that they had that quick little reaction?
Oh, I mean, it's for Amanita. Like, Nomi, when she's standing in the room with all of her senseis and Amanita, she can see everyone. Poor Amanita, as you kind of saw in this episode, they did a nice little camera trick to kind of give you a peek behind the curtain. Like, poor Amanita is just watching Nomi talk to herself and is waiting to be clued into what she needs to know. So, like, it's got to be nice for Amanita to actually put a face to a name and be like, okay, this is Riley. Got it. Okay. Like, I finally, you know, I've heard her name. I've, you know, seen what she can do and what Nomi's been, you know, talking to her about, but it's gotta be nice to, like, see this person. Like, okay.
And it also gives support. Like, even if there's even the tiniest bit in the back of her mind that, like, maybe this isn't true, like, mm-hmm. Look, here is this literal person that I am talking to. Like, okay, she's like, even if she had like 1% doubt, like, now it's gone because she actually saw one of the people she has been seeing Nomi talking to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that reassurance must have helped Diego too, because he got to see Riley and she was the chick with the weird accent, and she kind of gives him a look, but you can tell there's a smile behind her look too. So there's this familiarity people are getting as they're coming into the normal, you know, human lives, as opposed to our sensorium peoples.
Mitch, so I forgot to ask you. Yeah. Did you remember that Diego was married and had two kids?
No, but, but it didn't dissuade my ship. Sadly enough, maybe it should have, but it's still my ship.
Yeah. I kind of figured it would be.
Yeah, it hasn't stopped me before in ships. My shows tend to.
Man.
Yes. Oh yeah, he's his man. He's his best friend, and he's just so heartbroken. I'm like, oh, I love them together. I need them together. Best friends or anything, I just ship them as people together. And it's sweet, too. I still like how Diego and Will are having the same reactions, too, in all of these sequences. Like, yeah, oh, it's going to be this thing. And then Diego says the same thing right after him. Thought that was precious.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're so in sync. They're, like, sitting in hot, stinky cars together. They're fresh. I love them. Yeah, I guess I need to shit them a little bit less romantically because it feels more best friendy in this episode, but in the big orgy episode, it definitely felt very sexual, and I was very much happy, like, here we go. Every time. Besides my crazy ships, we then go into Nomi a little bit. As we discussed, she does bump her head, but before that, she's trying on a dress she doesn't like, and she seems really uncomfortable in it. And she's going to what I assume is a rehearsal dinner for the wedding of some sorts with Tegan's whole wedding party. So that seems like a big deal that she's just going to go and face the family. I guess she has her E-death, so she feels safe enough to go out and do literally anything at this point. But this I think as far as I remember, is her first big event that she's planning to go to after that e-death. Did you kind of do that math too, Kristen, when you were watching her getting ready?
It took me a minute to remember why she was getting dressed up. Like, when she's, like, acting nervous, and I'm like, wait, hold on. Where are we? But yeah, no, it makes sense. She's getting ready for the rehearsal dinner. Her sister is really supportive of her and everything, so of course she's been asked to give a speech, and, you know, that's going to weigh on Nomi, because she has to go face-to-face with her mom, and that, you know, I'm sure that's completely awful and terrifying and all of that. So yeah, it took me a minute to remember who Tegan was and why she was all of a sudden getting dressed up, but it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and it's sad to me that we didn't get to see this scene up and coming, because she bumps her head and is just probably stuck at home. I guess that's going to be the excuse she's going to tell the family then, that she was out for the night because she was a little bit concussed. Sorry. But
once again, proving her father's point that she's going to make the whole evening about her.
I mean, she didn't mean to trip in her heels like that. I don't know.
That doesn't change the fact that all of a sudden she's ruining this night, when apparently she's supposed to give a speech at the dinner, and, oh, I couldn't make it. Like, you really think her family's going to see that as anything but her making things about herself?
Yeah, from like an evil standpoint, they'll feel that way. Right, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's unfortunate, but whatever. She can't really help that at this point. Like, they're looking for points to pick at, because we don't really know all of Nomi's past enough to see those sequences of her potentially doing that. Like, maybe not on purpose, but always interrupting with something of her own drama. Yeah, it takes a toll on a family and of a group of friends if somebody's always of that nature. So it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense to the level they put it, is how I'd say, that goes on with Nobi's family. But yeah, you're right. Her family probably feels very validated. Hopefully Tegan does not. Tegan seemed pretty okay with Nomi in every facet and just wants her sister involved. I hope she doesn't agree with her parents all the way. We discussed that, I know, Caitlin, prior when we were on that episode together. So I don't know. Poor Nomi. She suffers a lot and goes through a lot and just can't seem to catch a break. She didn't really need this bump in the head. So I hope in the future episodes that she's okay and that it's not a serious injury. Although she was here in the end, she does show up when we have this final scene. So we have a bit of a confrontation building with Lila for the past couple of episodes, even the whole season, where she is always switching her allegiances. She wants to always follow who's in most power so that she can just survive. And she's been doing that with Fuchs for some time. She even says that she hasn't really been in love with him when he was obsessed with her and wants to marry her, and she's just playing with him. She's keeping him along because she knows that's how she can survive. He's pretty smitten with her, though, and he falls for her trap. He says, she says on the phone while Wolfgang and Fuchs are in the steam room that Wolfgang is the one that's looking to make the attack on your life. What you heard on the phone, the transcript you read about me agreeing, you know, to bow to you, or the agreement to kill you, that was just me going along with it because I was scared. So as Fuchs falls for this, he leaves Wolfgang alone in that steam room. Wolfgang is just stewing at this point. He is pissed. He's like, oh girl, I'm going to get you back. Don't you worry. And I love that like look of revenge in his eyes, because he doesn't say anything. He doesn't even need to. Maya, I know you like Wolfgang, especially when he's angry. So how did you feel when he was just sitting there in that steam room, literally steaming?
Oh.
I too felt that feel.
That feel indeed, yes. There's a lot of feels to be going around there. I feel you.
I mean, they're doing a great job with Leela. Because I hate her so much, so very, very, very much. But yeah, the actress is fantastic. She's definitely doing her job.
I'm just trying to understand the point of her at this point. Like, Like, you know, the whole thing at the end is like really action packed and cool, but I was really struggling with, okay, but why do I care about this? Like, that dinner is supposed to be all tense, and I'm just, it just seems so unimportant.
When she first appeared on the scene, like, when we first met her, I was really excited to see Wolfgang have, like, interactions with a whole nother cluster, someone completely uninvolved with Jonas and all of that. I was really intrigued to see where this was going to go. I honestly don't know or remember much of what Lila wants or doesn't want, or I have no idea what is driving her and what's going on, and I don't care. Like, it, there's so much else going on that makes sense and that's really intriguing with Will and the academic and Nomi and all of them, that this storyline has never grabbed me. So to see her now, like, I was like, oh, okay, this is where she stabs Wolfgang in the back. Okay, we finally got to that point. Like, I knew it was coming, but we're there.
Yeah, it's a no comment territory for myself. As far as we've seen, she has said she is in it to survive. And she says that with a bit of a sad look on her face, as she does with, in this episode, she says, I can't be controlled anymore. And she has a bit of a dead look in her eyes. She wants control over her survival as well. So she wants to be basically in power to trump everybody else in BPO or elsewhere that is coming after her. And she'll use anything she has to stay in that position of power and being one step or even 10 steps ahead of people.
See, like, I was interested in what she, what she represented when she first showed up, because they were talking about, like, there are all these other sensates around the world, and a lot of them have made deals with BPO, and, like, so what she could be representing in terms of that, but nothing, like, lately it's just been about this stuff in Berlin, and it's, like, that just is so much less interesting and so much less relevant to what I'm interested in finding out about. And they're just hooking her into the stuff that's not all that interesting when she has ties to things that could be a lot more interesting.
That's yeah, okay. So interesting to me, because I think that the Berlin situation is one of the more interesting parts of the story to me, but
it just feels so irrelevant to, like, the actual things that is important. Like, that just doesn't seem all that important to me.
I guess I'm very malleable because, as you said, Maya, it's important. It's like the center of a lot of action here. And then, Caitlin, you were saying it doesn't feel like it's getting us to the answers we want. I felt both ways. So I think, go ahead.
I mean, it's kind of similar, but not really, to, like, even Caffeus, maybe. Like, I'm intrigued to see where he goes with this whole government thing and him running for office and all that. But if there's a huge mystery at the center of the show containing, you know, the BPO and Whispers and Jonas and all of these people working together, that it's surprising to me that they give so much weight for Wolfgang's plot, for what he's involved in this show. So much of it is this self-contained, localized story about Berlin. And then you've got this sensate that walks into his life, and it still is all about Berlin, where you're hoping that there's a tie to BPO, or maybe she can help them, or maybe she's going to become another hurdle or whatever, and it just doesn't feel like it's affecting the greater story yet. Maybe it will, I don't know. But it doesn't feel like it's affecting the greater story. It feels like it's just this little corner of Wolfgang's world, and his story has never really taken, like, full prominence to where it's, you know, a major plot line. So it's just, I'm with Caitlin, like, it just doesn't feel like I'm supposed to be completely invested or something. I don't know.
Mm. Okay. But the reason it's set in Berlin is because they've established that the criminal underground, blah, 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 has, like, these kingdoms set up. And now that there's a power vacuum, she's moving in to make Berlin, like, dominated by sensates, like, making it their city.
so that they don't have to be like dependent on humans.
Yeah, that's a good point that almost gets lost in the details, because we do see Wolfgang gathering everybody, maybe on purpose, in his head as he's going to this meeting. And then Lila does say that. She offers a position of power or a right-hand position for Wolfgang to join her as being that leader of Berlin, being the sensate group that she wants, the safe city.
Yeah, because he's perfect. He is the heir to a kingdom, and he's a sensei.
Yeah. And he's a great fighter, as we often say, too, as are his sensei groups. They're fighters physically and in all other ways, too. So it makes sense that she'd make this offer now that I think you've brought up that point to me, Mai. I don't know if that swayed either newbie's perspectives on the importance of Lila and what she's trying to do here.
I have no memory of her saying that.
I think, like I said, lost in the details. Yeah.
Ties into how much I don't care about her. So I think I zone out when she just starts talking.
Right.
I've never caught on to that either. Like, I thought she was always making political moves for the stupid kingdoms. I never caught on to her trying to make this like a safe zone for sensates. Like, it just, yeah.
To be fair, I think she was undressing when she was saying this. Yeah. So there was a lot going on.
Like, honestly, that's also one of the things I really love about her part of the story, not the undressing part, but like her abilities with the visiting. And like, she clearly has such a good grasp on her sensei nature compared to our literal newbies who like Leto, who spontaneously visits when he feels like he's needed.
Yeah. Yeah, she seems like she's a master of everything it takes to be a good sensei. And
yeah,
I was half expecting the man that's in her cluster that keeps showing up to say, Wolfgang's not worth it, back off. I was expecting him to start making out with Wolfgang, but he made out with Lila, because there was that mention of, he finds you just as attractive as I do. So I was thinking that that's why they were bringing him into that scene, to show like Wolfgang being tempted by these people who are really into him. Like, it's not even just sexually, power-wise. They're really invested in his character. And that comes through in this really epic shot we have, because everybody's centered on Wolfgang and Lila's action in both sensei groups. It is chilling. It is so well done, the way that every character stands up behind both Wolfgang and our sensei group. And then we get to see a pretty clear look of everybody in Lila's group, I suppose, if you were to pause it. And it was cool. It was really epic. And then Kala starts the fight. She says, bring it, bitch. And she, I wouldn't have thought of this. She throws the wine bottle into the fire, exploding it and giving Wolfgang the distraction he needed. And I should mention too, we've already pinged out all of the other hired guns that are there to be on
Lila's side. MVP is Bug and Amanita.
Right, yes. Yeah, Bug is out there doing his thing, and Amanita seems like she's catching up onto how to really get into the hacking game, so good for her. So then our action happens, and we have a lot of people shot very quickly. It's all done in slow motion, but it seems like this happens within a series of like 30 seconds. Even the bartender picks up a shotgun at one point. Everybody else clears out. Seems like no innocent bystanders were hurt. But they're all just shooting guns a lot without paying attention to bullets, as we will see the repercussion of, I noticed. And it's funny, too, because Wolfgang even has this Tomb Raider moment when he grabs the two guns and he's, like, slow-motion diving as he's shooting her and turning around and trying to get her. And they're both hiding behind the columns. Neither are harmed by guns. But when they both run out of bullets, Wolfgang gives the episode's title, The Only Thing I Want Right Now Is One More Bullet, because he's so done with her. And she gives that threatening line of, you're going to wish that you were dead. That's the one thing I can promise you. And it's like, oh, here they go. Because then her hands-on physical fighter and her group joins in to fight Sun. And it seems like the ability is not going to always match like the physical strength of, because Wolfgang is like a pretty muscular man and is very easily able to bash her in the head, but she has her wits about her. She wanted that in a way. So it wasn't even like she was overcome by him. She was planning it as her getaway. She might have heard the police or known they were coming. So she acts as a victim. She takes off her dress in the real world this time, and then says, "He just attacked me," so that she can get away, and so that Wolfgang will then be chased by the police. And that's how our episode ends, with all that awesome action. I found it to be wonderful. I found it to be chilling. I want to open the board to everybody to talk about your favorite moments that happened here, or any other feelings you feel of what's going to happen in the future.
I mean, the way that the battle was shot, and like with all the sensates reacting and all that, it was very cool, like, to see that it's an aspect of the clusters and how they work and how they function that we haven't really seen yet. But it was hard to be completely invested in this because of the trouble I've had relating to what's going on here and to like getting involved in Lila and, you know, her role in Wolfgang's story. So I don't think I was as drawn in as I could have been to the story. Now that I kind of have a better understanding of what exactly is going on here, maybe this will be a little more, intriguing to me in the future. But like, I did appreciate the scene itself for like what it did and, you know, what we learned and saw about sensates in this scene.
Anybody else want to comment on this scene too? Caitlin?
That's fine.
Mai?
It's just a really well shot.
Yeah, it's very epic, and I need that gif of both sensei groups standing behind Lila and Lila and Wolfgang.
The punch is so good.
I found that really distracting. Like,
yeah.
Like where they're all getting like punched and all the cluster mates move. Like, I got what they were going for, but for some reason, it felt too much. That didn't work for me.
It was very Matrix-y.
Yeah. Like once we're back to Matrix. I agree. It was
when Neo's trying to avoid the bullets.
Yeah, it felt like he was dodging the bullets.
Yeah.
In slow motion like that. I know what you mean. Yeah. Definitely had the same action feel there. I can see how it's a lot, though. Like, that's a little bit too much stylistically for the first watch, I feel. Like, I was there when I first watched it, but now that I'm so invested in the characters and I know them all so well from having seen the whole show, I was like, don't you dare punch Riley and Nomi and Caiaphas and Will.
Yeah, because I feel like it's such a great visual of them sharing instead of visiting.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and the fact that they're all there for the fight makes me really happy. Yeah. That they're all there to like physically fight and punch. They're all putting their all. Like, sure, Sun and the other physical fighter on Lila's side are the ones doing the action, but it's almost like they're like combining their physical power into one punch. I find that to be really cool.
Yeah. And it's also like a constant reminder of like, if I was in a cluster, I'd be so useless.
I'd be like,
off yeah. to the side going, yay.
You did it. You punched a person. Good job. Yeah. Like Wolfgang's always like banging his forehead into people. I'm like, not about that life. Not about to do that. Sorry. Those bones are sharp, so.
It's like, if you guys are in desperate need of someone to teach you how to binge watch Netflix, I am your girl.
But yeah. You know,
that's my job.
I wouldn't be all that useful as a sensei either.
No. Yeah, they're all like super powered pretty much. Super minded or super powered. They have a lot going on, all of them. They have so many fighters in this group. It's very set up nicely. It's not like they really aren't going to win a fight, because it feels like they have a big one up on having as many like gun shooters and physical fighters. We even see Wolfgang in this episode, like beating up a bag, a sandbag. So it's like they're all physically training all the time, even before they were like known to be sensates to have fights like this. So good on them, because that's not going to be me. But our episode does end there. We're now going to go into our favorite scenes and our favorite lines of this episode. Mai, we're going to start off with your favorite scene.
And my favorite scene is the shot of Wolfgang when he's being joined by the others in the alley after he's done his little, I don't know if it's a goodbye tour or a please come help me tour, but it's a good shot.
Yeah.
That was a really good shot.
Yeah.
And I really did appreciate him just kind of like randomly popping in, not asking for their attention, but not like going it alone. He's not going it alone, but he's not asking for help either. He's just making them all aware that he is going to this terrible, like it's so
dumb thing.
It's so Wolfgang.
Yeah.
That's why I love him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's very dramatic, but in a way that's effective. I like that too. Kristen, what's your favorite scene?
Mine, let me get to the doc. Mine was at the beginning, and it was basically Lido in general, but Lido visiting Sun and her like discovering him in the gutter. And him just being, like, pathetic. And then them going up to the hotel and, you know, having their little talk and cuddling with the pillows. It's just very sweet. And I really just appreciate Lido and all of his, even in his misery, he's still really sweet and, you know, and is looking for comfort, but also gives a little comfort at the same time.
I'm obsessed with the way he, like, beckons her with his fingers.
Yeah.
And she just has this long-suffering look on her face, and it's like,
fine. Like, anyone else would probably be like, oh, Lido, let me, you know, like, they'd all be like, they'd fall head over heels for it, but Sun is just like, all right, fine, let's do this.
Yeah, you, like, fall into his eyes.
Yeah, it's so cute.
And Caitlin, what's your favorite scene?
Mine was Lido's bartending with, in the background of Nomi and Sun talking, and he's just showing off at the bartending, and everyone kind of looks at him when they realize that she needs to tend bar. It was great.
Like, one-handed while eating a banana.
Yeah. I was like, is the banana part of the drink, or are you just eating it for fun?
Bursts into tears.
It, like, he just appears and like, why is Lido here? And then he's just like bartending in the kitchen and they're like having this serious conversation. He's a delight.
See, that's what I mean by him like spontaneously visiting where he's needed. Like, he doesn't even know that he's doing it.
Yeah, he does have that sense.
Yeah, he just shows up.
He's just a delight.
I love him.
Mm-hmm. Constant delight.
So was Hernando. He's in my favorite scene, and he's sitting there observing Lido with Danny, and Danny's like, why does he like this movie so much? And Hernando's like, I have a theory, and he pushes up his glasses. It's so cute. I love his glasses pushing ups, and that one was like the most precious of all of them because he was postulating in a very specific way. It was great.
Also, does anyone have that as their favorite scene? No, we just did two favorite scenes. Lido's violent popcorn eating got me. Oh my god. Like, watching him, like, shove popcorn in his face while he's listening to them talk about him, like, it's so
passive-aggressive
eating. It's him being dramatic, even just eating popcorn, and I could not help but be charmed by him.
That was very cute. I agree. So on to our favorite lines. Mine.
Yeah, mine is also Wolfgang related, and it's a clustered combo. And they go, Wolfgang, ask for help. Can't picture it.
Yeah, he's a lone wolf. Pun intended again.
Wolfie.
Our Wolfie. Kristen, what's yours?
Mine comes from my favorite scene, of course. Sun discovers him in the gutter, and she asks him what he's doing, and he says, I'm practicing. And she says, For what? And he says, for my future as a homeless and unemployable failure. He's just so, oh, he's so Leto. I love it. But it's.
She just walks away from him. And he's like, son, come back.
Yeah, he's like, son, wait, wait. Yeah. Son. I just love him. I just love him.
It's very pure and it's very cute.
Yeah.
And my favorite line is when Nomi says to Jonas, I didn't think I could be any more confused with you, but congratulations, you found a way. Same. Always, always. Jonas is always that enigma and he loves it. He's like, yeah, here's this random bit of information, but like, come back later for more. Gotta go. Bye. It's not the most fun to experience as a television show watcher. So if you want to get a hold of us for...
Hey, you skipped Caitlin.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Go ahead, Caitlin.
Rude. Mine was from Diego, who I think is being a little too understanding about this whole thing, too. Is when Riley says that Will is worried about him, says, well, thank you, Ghost Cop, but I can take care of myself.
I love this whole Will is there but he's not there thing, because Diego like knows that Will is listening, but it's, you can tell he's so unnerved by the fact that he can't just like talk to Will. It's you can tell he's just like, oh my god, why can't he just be here so that I don't have to deal with this? Like, it's so funny.
Yeah. It's always so awkward when they're talking in the wrong direction. Yeah. He's not there. It's the other way.
Riley tries to get him to like turn around. He's like, I don't care.
Oh. I love my ship. It's always worth it. Into our contact info. If you want to get a hold of us for anything that we said in this week's episode that you loved or hated, we love to hear it all. Our email is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @re_watchable. And our Tumblr is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. We love your 5-star reviews in iTunes. And this week, if you leave us a 5-star review in iTunes, then Karen will FaceTime you so that you can feel like her sensate, but with a phone. On to our listener feedback for this week. We're going to start with an email from Gloria about Kala's obligations.
Yes, Gloria writes, hi, Team Rewatchables. My husband and I have been greatly enjoying hearing all of your thoughts as you watch Sense8, which is one of our favorite shows. Thanks so much for covering it and helping to bring it to more newbies. One, when listening to the Rewatchable episode covering Sense8 2x05, fifth episode, we both felt maybe we could help address some of the struggles the rewatchers were having with Kala's story. Her situation represents a dilemma that a lot of Indian women face, which is the tension between what they want to do in their lives versus what they're expected to do based on culture and society. She includes a link to an article that helps provide some perspective, and we will include that in the show notes. So if you want to check that out, make sure to take a trip on over to Hyperbole for the show notes. She continues, even though Kala is a scientist and proud of her education, she still feels pressure to set up the perfect life for herself because it's expected that she should not only succeed at work, but also net a good husband and start a family. And she feels an obligation to go through with setting up this perfect life because her family has supported her so much. Hope this helps provide some interesting material to discuss down the road. Either way, thanks again for the fun listen every week. Gloria.
Well, thank you, Gloria, for providing some more insight too on, especially via that article link. I did take a quick look on the obligation of Indian women and how they feel they need to build out their lives. And that's where I was saying before, when we were discussing of Kala's choices in this episode and in any other, she doesn't take her out because she may feel that obligation that we had Gloria describing here. So thank you, Gloria, for writing in about Kala. And then we have another email from Charles about Kafius and Angelica.
And they say, hello all, I'm a long-time listener of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast and started listening to Rewatchable because Sense8 is one of my all-time favorite shows.
I have some thoughts about Senzite and that I finally decided to get in touch with you about. The scene of Cafius being amazed by all the technology and amenities in Sagia's apartment. This scene has always rubbed me the wrong way because it seems like the writers forgot that Cafius is a Senzite and has already experienced all of these things through his connection with his cluster.
All of the understandable frustration with Angelica and how she is not a well-drawn-out character, I think we have to remember that we learn things at the same rate as the cluster. They know almost nothing about Angelica, and so we know almost nothing about Angelica. They never got a chance to meet her, so all they have are these weird ghostly interactions with the bits of her memories that have been preserved in the Sicilium. She's not well drawn out because she's not actually a character, just the fragmented memories of one. She's supposed to be a mystery that I'm sure would have become more and more clear as the series progressed, had the series been allowed to unfold as planned. I love listening to the podcast, although I have to admit that I binge-watched the whole series over 3 months ago after I started listening to your podcast, except for the last episode, which I'm saving for when you all get there with your rewatch. Looking forward to hearing how the newbies react to how the show wraps up. Charles.
Well, sure, in talking of Cafius, I didn't really think of that when I should have.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah. I guess it's... He did mention, I drank tea in London, and Zakiya's like, you been to London? He's like,
Sort of, kind of not.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really know how to explain that one away, honestly, if there was a way.
I still think he would have some space to maybe be amazed by seeing it. Like, you know, it's a part of his collective memory, so he knows how they've all dealt with technology, but I still think he would have some space for himself to be amazed at seeing it in his life.
Yeah, that's, firsthand.
That's what I took, like, somebody here on my level has all of this.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen this before, or I don't know what to do with it. It's more like, you have all this stuff? That's amazing.
Yeah, I agree. And he takes, like, the most intriguing part of the whole thing is, like, the espresso maker or whatever, and not everyone has one of those, so maybe that's, you know, it's not like they put a microwave in front of him and he was amazed by the microwave. Like, it was a machine that maybe not everyone has, so I didn't see a problem with that, more or less, yeah, because it's not something he was used to seeing in his world. And also, you know, just seeing it in this woman that he's attracted to and who's a part of his universe have all this stuff is really interesting and cool and crazy for him.
Right. And then as for Angelica as well, when you discussed how we're meant to feel like we don't know her and that she's not a full character because she's only bits of memory she's only ever seen in the past, save for the opening scene, I suppose. Yeah, that's something else I didn't really think of, that while we don't really know her, the only connection that the Sensates have to her is of her being their mother and having some random memories. What we often bring up is the emotional connection we don't have. Go ahead, Caitlin.
I was going to say, my problem with this is Jonas. Jonas knew her as a real person, and Jonas has done nothing to flesh her out as a person, and he knew her intimately as a person, so you could use him. Then again, he was another character we talked about not being fleshed out,
useless himself.
He's sketchy McSketcherson, so but we do have a connection to a character who knew her and has tried to be like, she was so wonderful and I loved her, and then we get nothing.
I really did like this phrase, preserved in the Sicilium. Like, really great.
It's a great sci-fi term.
Yeah.
Well, thank you everybody for your feedback this week. We really appreciated it. And now we want to get into our final part of the show today. This is our predictions on the newbies part for our next episode. Caitlin's conjectures and Kristen's contemplations. For Sense8 209, what family actually means. Take it away.
It's a Lilo and Stitch crossover, obviously. It's all about Ohana.
Nomi and Leto, maybe? I don't know.
Done.
yeah, I definitely think we're going to get some reactionary stuff from Nomi's family in this episode, because she did supposedly miss the rehearsal dinner or whatever she was supposed to go to. So I think we're going to get some pushback from her family, which is going to remind her of her Sense8 family and how important they really are and that they're her true family. I wouldn't be surprised if we see somebody else's family too. I'm not sure how many we're going. Oh, well, obviously we'll probably see Son's brother. So that'll also gives us some family ties into this. So yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of little things that remind us that they each have, you know, like biological families, and then they also have this Sense8 family that's growing and becoming a more integral part into who they all are. So yeah.
Well, those are some great predictions for Sense8 209, what family actually means. We'll see you next week for Rewatchable episode 291. But as for Rewatchable 290, I've been Mitch.
I'm Mai.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Caitlin.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.